Hi, everybody. Thank you, Dalia, for bringing me. My name's Nomi Rifkamos. Some of you I know, some of you I don't know, some of you read my article, some of you didn't. It's fine. I'm very privileged to be here, Erev Yom Kippur, and I hope that my story will help inspire your year. So, the title of this class is Happiness is Not by Chance, it's by Choice. Okay? And for many, many years, I was teaching a happiness class. I work at Eshet Torah, and I run a lot of their programming, and I have my own women's programming there as well that my husband and I created many years ago that we run for seminary students. And we've been directing programs and making programs and teaching for many, many, many years and running educational programs at Eshet for the last at least 8 years. So I'm not new to speaking, I'm not new to Kirov, and I'm not new to classes, and I'm not new to a lot of things. I am new to this discussion, because it's my life. It's funny, I used to teach a happiness class all the time. This was like the class the H groups would ask me to come teach for their girls. Secular, totally from, I've taught this class a million times. It's always called The Secret to Happiness. Rav Noach Weinberg, who founded Eshet Torah, had a class called Secret to Happiness. A really awesome class, I loved it. And I just took it and made it my own, basically what I did. And every year, this class would change just a little bit, or every time I would teach it, it would change just a little bit, because I added a little bit of my own life into it. So as background, in case you didn't read this article and you don't know who I am, I got married 12 years ago, and we have three beautiful kids. My oldest son is 11, and my twins are 8. They're very cute. And 11 and a half years ago, or 11 years, whatever it is, about 5 months into our marriage, we found out my husband had cancer, and I was just expecting my first kid. Like 5 weeks, like literally just expecting my first kid. And the journey basically started from there. It was a lot of hospitals, was a lot of different treatments, and kids in between. So I can go into the story a little bit, but I just want to give you background of where this started. And every time I would teach this class, I'd add like, oh, and then my husband had chemotherapy, and like, this is how he felt. And then even with that, you know, he could still be Basimcha. Oh, but then he had a bone marrow transplant, and okay, so this is what it looked like for many, many years. So my husband passed away 6 months ago, Erev Purim. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could teach this class again. I don't know if I can stand in front of people again and say, I'm totally happy, I'm totally going to teach this class again. And after maybe a few weeks, I was like, you know, I really can still teach this class. I'm still going to get up and I'm going to still teach this class. It's just going to be different. So this is the class I'm going to offer you today, okay? When I usually teach this class, it's usually to a group of secular women. And I ask them, what is happiness? What's the definition of happiness in Western society? You tell me, what is the definition of happiness in Western society?
Drink, sleep, be merry.
Drink, sleep, be merry, what else?
Have everything you need.
Okay, now what if I told you we're going only to women now? Like, what is the perfect happy woman according to, like, Western society?
Taking care of.
And?
Money. Beauty.
Okay. So if I would, right, so if I would describe, like, Barbie, right, that's pretty much what they're telling us we need to be in order to be happy in our society. Okay? Now, I have never gotten anybody complain about this, not in completely secular groups and not in firm groups, because I think we realize it's true. We're taught, for American, I think all of you are American, right? Or of Western culture, yeah? We are taught that in order to be happy, we have to look a certain way, act a certain way, be perfect a certain way, dress a certain way, be intelligent a certain way. This is what's going to bring us simcha. Except that we never find simcha this way. Meaning you can get little bits and pieces of it. I'm not saying you don't find it temporarily. You get your new iPhone, you're so excited. You get your new something else, you're so excited. Okay, there's always something to be excited about. The next, you know, nicest looking purse in Zara, I don't know. You know, then you're excited. Okay, but then at what point does this become constant? There's just no constant here. There's no constant simcha ever. It's something that you're always waiting till the next thing. And then you're happy for a short period of time, and then it kind of gets old, and then you need the next thing. There's no consistency to your simcha. But Hashem's telling us we have to be b'simcha all the time. It's a constant thing. Well, how does this work? So Rav Noach taught that in Judaism, it's actually in Pirkei Avos. He didn't just say it out of nowhere. What's the pasuk in Pirkei Avos for Simcha? Do we know? Ezehu Asher Usamech Bechalko. Okay? Exactly. What does that mean?
Is that whatever he has? Who is rich, who is happy with
him? What does that mean? One who is wealthy is one who is happy with his wealth. How does it define simcha? What does that mean? So Rav Noach gave an amazing line to this, and he said, happiness is a free will choice. Okay? Happiness is a state of mind. It's your state of mind. I'll give you an example of how this works. Think of, like, the worst day ever, right? Really bad day. And then someone says something really dumb to you, or someone bumps into you in the store, and literally drives you off the wall on a really bad day, right? Now take the same scenario where it's like your best, most favorite day ever, and the same scenario happens. Someone bumps into you, or someone says something ridiculous to you, and you just look at them and laugh because your day's awesome. Why am I going to get ruined by something so simple? Same scenario, two different ways, because it's based on our state of mind, okay? So there is those like temporary pleasures that we have that we should enjoy and say thank you to Hashem for, but really the idea is to have constant simcha, and it is actually achievable, okay? Because it's a state of mind, it's your choice. So this is how it applies to my life. Basically, on the day that we found out that my husband was diagnosed with cancer, we were actually very excited about it because it was Hodgkin's. Hodgkin's is 98% curable, so it sounds kind of funny to be excited about it, but it was of the cancers to get was a very, very simple one. It's 98% curable. They were like, oh, it's totally fine. It's like one round of chemo, you'll be fine. The nurses were hugging and kissing us in Israel. They were like, yes, it's Hodgkin's! And I'm like, go Israelis who are hugging me over Hodgkin's. It's so cool. Okay, so I actually was laughing. I thought it was really funny. But it wasn't so simple. We caught it very early. They did the treatments. But every time he would just relapse. And every time it would get more aggressive. There also came a point where the cancer wasn't so much the issue anymore. It was so much treatment and so much different things that really the treatment and what we did to conquer the cancer also really affected his body terribly. So over the years with our three kids and watching them grow up and really being excited to have them and enjoying them, and we really understood the concept of the very fine line between life and death when he was alive a long time ago. And we decided at that point that we were going to make sure our kids had a real childhood. It didn't matter how sick he was. And on top of that, that we should just build amazing memories in our home. That everything should be based on building memories, but effectively and actually building them, choosing to do that. Not like, we did this one-time thing and, you know, we remember it because we did it one time. We purposely did specific vacations in a certain way to build certain memories. We purposely did certain collections with my kids to build memories. He had a stamp collection with my kids, and a seashell collection with my kids, and a rock collection with my kids, and a coin collection with my kids, because at a certain point he couldn't get off the couch, literally. So he wasn't an Abba that could teach my kids how to ride a bike, and he wasn't the Abba that could play a ball outside with them or lift them on top of their shoulders on Simchas Torah. He couldn't do it. So we had the people who did it for us, which was amazing, right? But it wasn't him. So he had to find a different way to be an Abba for them. And he very, 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 very much was their Abba, more so than most Abbas ever are, because he was home 24/7. And although he was feeling terrible most of the time, it wasn't something he ever shared with anybody, including myself. I used to, like, yell at him, could you just tell me, like, for a second, how you feel? And he'd be like, no. I'm like, but I need to understand. He's like, no, you don't. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so happy the kids are here. I'm so happy I'm here. Nothing else really matters. That was his answer to me every time. He's like, it's fine. It hurts. I'm fine. I'm doing well. It's a great day. It's not breathing, but it's still a great day. Okay. Towards the end of how sick he was getting, he kept saying to me, and I was a little shocked by this time, but I understand better now. He kept saying to me, are you sure you're okay with me like this? He kept saying, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm so excited you're here. I could care less. Why? Because there was a lot of machines in my house and he wasn't breathing and I didn't want nursing help. I wanted to be the nurse. I happen to really like medical life and I was very, very, very possessive of my husband and protective, so I didn't want anybody else touching him except for the nurses we went to in the hospital and only specific ones. They knew. And we were very, 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 very close to the hospital staff, so I was very lucky because they would like fight over who would be in our room. Every shift there was like an argument over like which person got my husband's room. I kid you not, sometimes I'd actually walk into these meetings, which you're totally not allowed to ever do, and I'd be like, hi, so not allowed to do this. I just need to see who's here today. And they would just crack up laughing. I'm like, oh good, it's either you or you, okay? Like, figure it out. And they'd be like, okay. It's very me. I just walked into the middle of their meetings. That's what I did. I didn't care because it was for my husband's benefit. So I could care less what meetings they were in. And I wasn't going to care if they liked it or didn't like it. I needed what was good for my husband. There was nothing to talk about. And they knew there was nothing to say to me either. They were like, oh, okay, it's number four, we can't say anything. And I'm like, no, you can't. Nope. Actually, it was funny. One time I asked Robinson Spentner for something, and she was like, does anybody ever say no to you? I'm like, no. She's like, yeah, I don't think so. I'm like, no. She's like, I can't either. I'm like, no, you can't. Okay, great. I don't know. I just, no one says no to me, pretty much. When it's something I'm really passionate about. Because there's no way around it. It's just, this is what it is. At this point in time, he kept saying to me, do you really want to do this? And I'm like, I don't know what you're asking me. You have to stop asking me this. I don't know what that means. He says, listen, I'm getting sicker and sicker, and I want to be here, and I'm trying to be here, but it's a burden for you. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not. Chas v'shalom. He's like, no, Murphy, you haven't left the house to go grocery shopping. I'm like, it's okay, Esther Minsky will go, or someone else will go, or she'll bring me dinner, I don't know, something, like, it's fine. And I had friends going to the grocery store with me, because I couldn't actually go to the grocery store, because it would take longer than an hour, and it was too far from my house. And it was terrifying for him, because he could choke on himself, he could stop breathing, the machine could run out, and he can't catch the cord. I couldn't leave my house, okay? And when I did, I usually had someone in the house with him, one of his rabbis, someone he was learning with, a friend of his, something. I kind of made his rabbis and friends babysitters. That's kind of what that was. Or my kids. My kids were really well trained to use the oxygen machine, to use the machines that were in the house. They really enjoyed it a lot, actually. And they didn't have to use it so much, but my oldest son could stay home with my husband and do his masks and his machines and his things. He could actually give him all his medications. He knew which ones were nighttime, daytime, everything. And he felt very good about being able to help his Abba. So leaving my kids home was actually a pretty good babysitter also. I didn't do it so often because I didn't want them to feel responsible and because I never knew what happened. And I kept yelling at him, like, stop asking me this question because I love being your wife. I could care less how sick you are. I mean, I'd like you to get better, but, like, I have you. So it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. When he was in the hospital the last 7 weeks, he was there before he passed away. He had to get a tracheotomy. He couldn't speak anymore. He couldn't move anymore. He weighed, I don't know, like 39 kilos at that point. His body just didn't function. It really didn't function. There was no breathing, there was no talking, there was no eating on his own, there was no walking, nothing. So I was with him 24/7. I literally could not leave the cubicle of the room because when I left the room, his blood count would drop. The screens would drop. So they knew that I couldn't leave my room. So the nurses would come and give me like 5-minute shifts. When he was sleeping, they would stand in the room, or they would stand there for a few minutes to make sure that he knew that they were there and he would feel okay if they were there. So I could go literally into the nurse's station, which obviously I was allowed to use, VIP access to nurse's station. They had an espresso machine in there that, by the way, none of them knew how to use. I had to train them. I was cracking up. They would like bring like bought coffees. I'm like, guys, you have an espresso machine in your nurse's. Like, what? Well, we don't know how to use it. I cracked up laughing. I had to teach them how to use their espresso machine. And very often, part of my vacationing was during night shift to make the nurses coffee so I could get out of the room for a few minutes. That was, like, my exciting moment of the evening, okay? So we did have people visiting us, and we had people bringing us dinner, and we had a lot of beautiful things going on in Klai Israel there. I remember holding my husband's hand the whole time and saying to him, this is, like, the best vacation. And he's like, it kind of is. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, but why? I said, listen, no kids, no laundry, no dishes, no wake-up time in the morning, no wake-up time at night. It's just me and you forever, like 24/7 in a cubicle. it's amazing. And he's like, it is. I'm like, yeah, we never really did a honeymoon. This is a good one. And we had the time of our lives, you understand? We really had the best time ever in this hospital room. Because we made the nurses into our family. We had family coming to visit. And we just loved the together the whole time. Not that we weren't together in our house the whole time before that either, because I stopped working. I was working from home instead of from a building, because I told you I couldn't leave my house even to go grocery shopping. His whole aspect of life was always everything's good. Everything's great. Including the last few seconds that he was alive. He literally said to me right before he closed his eyes, I'm feeling good. That's the last thing he said to me. I feel good. It's who he was and what he lived. It's who I got to be with him, and it's what my kids got to see growing up. So why am I explaining this as like the Simcha class? I'm explaining this to you. Because it's a choice. Because every morning that I woke up then and every morning that I wake up now, I have to choose what my day is going to look like. And listen, I could very easily be miserable. There are some very hard days. I'm not a person who's going to sit there and say, I'm laugh all day, every day. No, I cry plenty. I cry plenty. My kids cry plenty. You have no idea the things that come out of their mouths. The questions that they have. The depth of their hearts and the pain that they're in. Even though they really go to school Bisimcha every day and they come home Bisimcha every day. And by the way, just to explain to you how amazing they are. I told you he died Erev Purim. It was 2 days before Purim. That means the next day was Tech Bosot day in school. It's the day that the kids dress up in school. This is like the one day of the year all the kids are dying to have. Because it's the most exciting day of the year to go dress up in costumes. And your kids are a little bit older, you'll see. It's like the coolest thing ever. And then they have these big raffles, and they do this whole thing in their school. And the whole day is like based on their costumes and who wins the best costume and this whole long thing. Okay, my kids were very excited about this costume day, and I had bought them costumes a month before in the hospital mall because I could go there, right? And I knew that I wasn't sure what it was going to be. So I made sure that I had everything ready for them already. I actually had made telefonos a week before because I wasn't sure what life was going to look like. I wasn't thinking that he was going to be dead. I was just thinking I might not be home to like give them out, so at least they should have them for their class. They shouldn't be the kids that like Nebuch don't have like shalchanos to give out, right? So everything was prepared for them already. Each kid actually had two costumes because I didn't know they were going to like, and I just sent them home. And for 7 weeks, I basically didn't see my children. I saw them on Fridays for about an hour. They knew that I was like alive. And we brought them to the hospital a few times. Not so many, but a few. That next morning after the Levaya, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, my kids were awake, and I got up with them, and I said, this is the first day of my Shiva. I said, guys, want to go to school? You don't have to. Except they're like, I said, it's Tach Posot day. They're like, we kind of want to go. Is that bad? I said, no, it's not bad. Would your Abba want you to go dressed Besimcha to school, Erev Purim? Yeah, Mommy, for sure. I was like, okay, so let's get dressed. I dressed all my kids in costumes. My daughter was Cinderella. To do her hair with her ribbon and her makeup, and one of my boys couldn't figure out if he wanted to be a doctor or an astronaut, so he was hilarious. He dressed as an astronaut, but he took his doctor's costume with him, so he had both, so he could switch in the middle. And my oldest son wanted to be a bar mitzvah boy. He's 11, so he had talis to fill in, like a hat, a suit, a whole thing. They were so excited to go to school. Now I'm about to send them out the door, because my friend is coming to pick them up just to take them out of my house for the day. And she was like, what are they doing? I'm like, you're going to take them to school. Because they want to go to school. It's Tach Bosot day in school. It's such a day of Simcha. You have to take them to school. And she was like, okay. But I said to my kids, listen, you might want to have like a line ready. Because you're going to be asked a lot of questions. And that's okay. Are you okay with being asked a lot of questions? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. Well, what do you think you're going to answer your friends when they ask you about your Abba dying yesterday? So my daughter, who's 8 or 7 at the time this happened, she says to me, I already thought about this, Mommy. That's my daughter. I'm like, oh, really? You thought about this, Adina? What did you think about? I know, Mommy. Listen. That's how she talks. Listen. I'm going to say to my friends that my Abba's in Shemaim, and he's bari, and he's healthy in Shemaim. And it's good for him. And he's in my heart now, so I'm okay. And I was like, oh, that's a great line, Adina. And her brothers were like, good one. So they had this like pre-prepared line that they were going to use in school. Okay, so they get to school, and I think they had pre-prepared something for the kids in school before my kids got there. I don't know, I wasn't involved in this, but the schools, so backtrack, they're the only children who have ever lost a parent in both of their schools. Baruch Hashem, but they're the only kids who've lost a parent there. So the schools had to figure out what they were doing because they didn't have the scenario yet. And I hope never again, but they never had the scenario, so they had to figure it out. So they had a whole thing in my daughter's school and in my boys' school where they had told the kids before my kids got there with a psychologist and a whole thing. Anyway, my daughter gets to school. She stands on a chair. She said, I want to talk about my Abba. She gave an entire, like, half an hour long eulogy about her Abba. It's my 7-year-old kid. And then she allowed people to ask questions. I was cracking up. Kid was so funny. Okay. So this is my kids. This is what they're like. This is what they're like all the time. The depth of how amazing they are. Her twin brother, Gabriel, says to me, Mommy, how do you know for sure he's dead? How do you know for sure, for sure? I had to think about it for a second. And I said, listen, remember the machines in the hospital? Remember I told you the numbers? The one on the big one that's connected to Abba that had, like, the saturation and the pulse and the blood pressure. Yeah, I remember those, 99, this. I said, yeah. Look, they all went to FS. They all went to zero, and the line was straight. It didn't look like this. And he was like, oh, as for real, he's dead. I said, yeah. So they actually tell their friends this, because apparently their friends had asked them, how do you know for real he's dead and not like coming out of the ground somewhere? No, listen, everything went to zero and the lines are straight. Like, it just gave them a very tangible way of understanding that this is how it worked. But I told them, I said, you know, but I was with him the whole time. Really, Mommy, till the end, till FS? I said, yeah, till FS. That's so nice, Mom. I said, yeah, it was very nice. That was so nice. This same son, who's very deep, says to me, Mommy, this is to the genius of this question. Right, we already had such a hard thing happen to us. I said, yeah, Mama, we had such a hard thing happen to us. So does that mean Hashem won't make any more hard things in my life, right? Like if I fall and break my leg, it won't be broken. What's he asking me? I'm never going to have nisyonos ever again. This was the biggest nisyon. It can't be I'm going to have more. That's what he said to me. It's my 8-year-old. So he's asking me if it means he's never having nisyonos ever again. And I looked at him and I gave him a big hug. I said, nope, that's not what that means. You're still going to have nisyonos. He's like, why? This was already so hard. I said, no, won't get harder than that one. That's your hardest one. But you need them to make you who you are. So I explained to him about Avram Avinu. I sat with him and I said, right, Avram Avinu, he was born a tzaddik. Yeah, Mommy, no, he wasn't. He wasn't born a tzaddik. He became one of our avos based on his life. He had 10 insane nisyonos. Yeah, his dad kicks him out, tries to burn him in a fire. There's a lot of, he's told to kill his kid. There's a million things in between. His wife dies while he's killing his kid. Like, he has to find a burial plot for her. There's a lot of nisyonos that Avraham Avinu went through to make him who he was. But he kept going. That's why he became one of our avos. So he says to me, oh, I'm going to be a tzaddik like Avraham Avinu. I said, yeah, absolutely. Because Hashem put you in this house, and you're different than all your other friends. You're right. But our Abba taught us to be b'simcha. He said, yeah, Mom, he did teach us to be b'simcha. I said, yeah. So what do we do in my house? We go around the table very often. We were doing this before. We always had a highlight of the week in my house. Every Shabbos, we go around the table, and we say a highlight of the week. What happened this week that was amazing? What was your favorite thing in school? What was your favorite thing about this week? If you weren't in school, maybe something your friend did, whatever it is. And we all loved it. Still love it. So what do I do now? We go around the table, and I ask my kids, tell me some fun memories you have of Abba. Something you remember that's amazing. And they go around the table, and they come up with the best examples. These kids vividly, vividly remember their Abba, and it's not just because it's been 6 months, it's because we built real memories. And every once in a while, I'm putting them to bed, remember that time, Mommy? Like, they just do it on their own. My daughter was funny. We were, like, they just directly tell people how it is. They're not embarrassed, so people are a little shocked sometimes. Someone was standing next to my daughter at one point. They didn't see me there, so he was asking her, was asking her, where's your mommy and Abba? And she looked at him and smiled. She said, my mommy's right here, but my Abba's dead. Like that. And he was like, I'm so sorry. She said, it's okay, you don't have to be sorry. He's in my heart. He's buried the Shemaim. And they just looked at her like, okay, I'm going to walk away now. they just didn't know what to do about it. It's very real for them. No one here is in denial. No one's not thinking about it. So a lot of people ask me, like, so how do you get up every day? It's hard. It is hard. I'm going to give you an example of what's hard for me. I think a lot of people thought the night times would be worse for me. Because then your kids are sleeping and you're alone and you're usually with your husband at night. And I was like, no, that's not so hard for me. I feel very at peace at night. I sleep really well. I can talk to my husband in the air. It's fine. The mornings are the hardest. Because even though he couldn't physically help me for many years with my kids in the morning, you know that rush in the morning when you're like trying to get them all out and they're all screaming at you and they're like trying to get dressed and you're dressing them and it's like you have to get to the gown and there's a hasa'a and there's a lot of things going on there, right? So you have to get them to school. But there's hasa'a, so you have a time frame. You can't just walk down the street to like the gun next door. This is like they're on real hasa'as. If they miss these hasa'as, it's going to take me 2 hours to take my kids to school because they're on opposite sides of Yerushalayim. Okay? They cannot miss these hasa'as, basically. And they're going nuts. They woke up, they're starving, they don't have enough lunch, they ate this, they're too tired from last night. I don't know, there's a lot of things going on in the morning. This is what it looks like in my house. And sometimes I'm just like, I'm just going to stay in bed. I'm not going to do this. And then I remember, wait a second. I'm not going to stay in bed because they're my children. And I need to get up and make sure they get to school happy and healthy. Okay, so how do I do this? Because it's not so easy for me to remember how to do this in my brain. What used to happen was my husband set his alarm clock. And he would wake me up, even though he wasn't getting up. He would wake up and wake me up and say, okay, in 5 minutes we need to get up. It's hard, they're screaming, I hear them screaming. I'm so sorry I can't get up and help you. But you're going to do a great job getting them out to school today. This is like a morning routine for me. I don't have a voice telling me in the mornings, you're going to do a great job getting the kids out to school in the morning. So I was trying to figure out how I was going to do mornings. I have his phone still. I set his alarm clock. It's not mine, it's his. And I'm like, okay, this I could do. I could hear his alarm clock in the morning. That will wake me up. And it'll remind me that this is what he used to say to me every morning. So I find little things here and there that help me put myself in the frame of mind to be in such a good place where I can choose simcha. I can choose to look at my life in the most amazing ways. I've also learned something very interesting. I'm a little bit of a black and white person in terms of like emotions and things like that. I'm a little bit all or nothing, where I really thought like if you're besimcha, you can't be sad. This is not true. Because I feel very, very, very besimcha every day, even when I'm sad. Even when it's a hard day. Even when I feel like I don't know how I'm going to get to like, I don't know what I'm doing for dinner, but I'm going to get there. Right? I don't know what I'm going to do when I get to Rosh Hashanah. I literally, on Purim Day, said to someone, I can do Purim. I have no idea how I'm doing Rosh Hashanah. I'm doing Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to do Rosh Hashanah. This was on Purim. So in the weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah, it was getting very intense for me because I thought, Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to do Rosh Hashanah. How do you do Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah saying to you, who by fire, who by water, who by this, who by that, who by illness, who by whatever. This was planned last year. Last Rosh Hashanah, this is what Hashem planned for me. Someone said to me, she said, wow, last year was such a hard year for you. I hope this year is much better. And I thought about it for a minute. And then I looked at her and I said, no, last year wasn't such a hard year. It wasn't a bad year. It was an amazing year, actually. I had the best time with my husband, who was insane, but I had the best time with my husband. I had the best time seeing my kids grow in a way that they never grew before. And had an amazing time understanding life very clearly. And I still do. I realize how lucky I am to know how to live every day based on the values that we incorporated into our home. I know that the marriage I had came full circle. I was with him from the beginning, and I held his hand literally till the last second. Not only that, the Chevra Kedisha made an exception for me to go to the burial when they buried him in Har Zeisim, which they really don't let them women do. They allowed me and two other women to come because they kept saying to Chevra Kedisha, you don't understand. She was Melavehim from the beginning to the end. She can't leave now. She has to go to the Kever. And they let me come. I had to stand in the back, which was fine with me. But I feel very whole and very complete. I had a once-in-a-lifetime marriage. It was, you know, 11 years, 11 and a half years, but it was like 75. We packed in like a 75-year-old marriage into these 11 years. We really did. We really did. It's going to last me a lifetime. It's going to last my kids their lifetime. It's a forever thing. At this point, I try to figure out how to be besimcha now. And it's not that hard. Because I wake up in the morning and I remember what an amazing life I have. I had an amazing husband who I had the privilege of knowing and being married to, and I wouldn't take that away for the world. I would do it all over again in a split second with no cheshbonos, even if I knew the outcome would be exactly the same. Because it was worth it to me. I have three beautiful kids from it also. It was worth it to me. The koach I have now to be able to stand here is worth it to me. If you would have asked me as a teenager, like, to name my strengths, I would have said, oh, I'm a person of chesed. Strength, that word never would have come out of my mouth in my dreams. In my dreams, that word never would have come out of my mouth. I never looked at myself that way. Me, a person of koach, for sure not. Chesed, I like to do. I'm nice to people. Okay, great. Strength, no, this is not my quality. It's not true. Because I grew into that quality. But I wake up every day and I choose what my day is going to look like. I choose how to raise my kids. I choose to give them a childhood that's exciting and fun and amazing, even when we're crying together. I had couches in my house that my husband sat on for 12 years. We picked them when we were engaged. Loved these couches. But they were torn. And I'm a little OCD. Couldn't handle the tear in them. So for the last year, we were trying to find new couches, but he kept saying to me, I'm really comfortable. I can't. Like, let's just do new couches when I'm feeling better, but I'm used to these couches. Just leave them. I said, okay. So once he passed away, I found beautiful new couches, and I was like, oh, we'll finally get around to getting new couches. Didn't think this was such a big deal. My kids were home. We picked the couches together. We went to the store together. We sat in a million couches. We picked all the couches together. My kids pick my clothes for me. Like, I go to the stores with them. That's what we do. We do everything together. They love it. And I love being with them. And they're amazing, amazing people. And I share with them everything. I mean, to their age and what's appropriate for them. But I really share with them life. They picked with me these couches that I love. They're great couches. So we had the guys who were bringing the new couches take out the old couches. And as they're pulling out my husband's couch, I like collapsed. I collapsed on the floor. I was hysterical crying. Hysterical, hysterical, hysterical. I did not realize it was going to be so hard for me. I felt like I was erasing a piece of my husband. Because every time I walked to my living room, I could see him sitting on that couch. And I just put new couches there. It was hysterical. So my 11-year-old comes to me, held me really, really, really tight, and said, Mommy, you're doing such a good job. You're doing such a good job, Mommy. It's going to be okay. It's a couch. You're right, Abba sat there, and we really miss Abba, but really, it's a couch. You're going to be okay. And he did not let go of me until I could, like, catch my breath. Did not let go of me. And he kept repeating, it's going to be okay, Mommy. We're a team. It's going to be okay. Because I've been telling my kids forever, we're a team. So we do things as a team. No one's more responsible than anybody else. We are a team. Mommy, we're a team. When I cry, you take care of me. When you cry, I take care of you. It's going to be okay. Because you're such a good mommy. And because Abba was amazing. And he held me so tight. Finally, he lets go of me, and my daughter looks at me. She takes my hand. She says, Mommy, remember you told us and I told you Abba's in our hearts? Yeah. It's just a couch. I'm like, right. But she said, let's take a picture of the couch in case it's too hard for you. I said, this is a good idea. So we took a picture of the couch. And by the way, the couch is in my friend's house. So she says to me all the time, if you ever need to come see the couches, I'm like, okay, I'm not there yet. So I'm happy they're in your house. So basically all the furniture I got rid of, I actually gave to people I know. I actually know where all of it is. My bedroom set, everything's in homes where I know where they are. So if I ever need to visit it, I can. But there are certain things you don't realize they're going to hurt or going to trigger some memories or that are going to make the day feel like you're not going to, like, survive. But I always take a step back and say, wait a second. I, like, remember my dad. It's just a couch. I had to remember. So while I was doing this, while I was taking some of the furniture out of my house, it wasn't because I was trying to get rid of my husband. It was because there was a rip in the couch. I got rid of my bedroom set because I switched rooms because the other room had a bathroom and mine didn't. So it's funny, people are like, oh, you're getting rid of your bedroom set because it's hard? I'm like, no, I like my bedroom set. I just want a bathroom. In the process of doing a lot of these things, going through his closet and getting rid of everything before Rosh Hashanah, and having the gemach come and get it all so they can give it to someone else, it's not so simple for me to watch all his suits go, his shoes go, his shirts go. So in order to make it a little easier, I took a duffel bag. I put all my husband's clothes on a bed in piles. And I brought my two boys into the room and I said, listen, I'm going to close the door. You have one suitcase to fill of the things that are special to you, that you want when you're bigger. The rest we're giving to people that don't have because we don't need it. And when Abba comes back to Chias HaMeisim, we'll get him new clothes. And they're like, oh, okay. They filled a suitcase. And it was very funny to see what they stuck in it. They put a lot of his pajama pants in there because most of the time he was in pajamas. Honestly, most of the time I think I was also in pajamas because we were home and the only time we went out was on Thursdays for hospital day. And even for hospital day, he bought himself black pajama pants because he didn't want to look not yeshivish. So he had black pajama pants that looked, they were like linen, so they looked like more misudar. But he couldn't wear regular yeshiva pants. It was too uncomfortable for him for his skin. So he had black pajama pants to leave the house so he would not look yeshivish. Okay? With his white shirt on top of his pajama shirt so he could take it off when he got there. I didn't want to embarrass my kids. On Shabbos, even though he really couldn't get dressed by himself ever, I had to dress him, shower him, everything. He really couldn't be in regular clothes. It was uncomfortable. He had a bekashah, even though he's not Hasidish. And every Shabbos, he would ask me to please put it on him because he wanted to be mechubah for the Shabbos table. No one would have cared. It was just me and my kids. And he said, no, I care because the kids need to know Shabbos, we dress mechubah. Didn't matter to him what it felt like or how hard it was to put it on. So in that suitcase with a bekashah and a lot of pajama pants, some Hawaiian shirts. This is funny. My husband ordered himself Hawaiian shirts. Why? He wanted to feel the simcha of the brightness of the outside world that he couldn't be part of anymore. So we have a beautiful yard, Baruch Hashem, and we used to sit there in our Hawaiian shirts with our drinks and our oxygen machines until it got cold. So my kids were like, we need the Hawaiian shirts. I'm like, for sure you need the Hawaiian shirt. And then it was cold, so we had really fun socks. I promise you, they polka dot ones, little people ones that said like funny things on them. And my daughter would come into the room every morning and put my husband's socks on. That was her thing. She had to help in some way. My kids all had different things they helped with. This is how it was. This is how it is now, too, because what do my kids do now? They help me. They help me. I don't ask them very much because I don't want them to feel overwhelmed and responsible because they're little kids and they have a childhood and they deserve to live it and be excited and happy and have fun and do everything a little kid does. But they want to help me. One night I was like exhausted and couldn't do anything. My 11-year-old made dinner. My 11-year-old made dinner, washed the dishes, and put them away afterwards. Put all the kids to bed. Look, this is like a once every, like, I don't know, 2 month situation. But, like, he didn't say anything. He knew, okay, it's hard for mommy today. I'll do it. Because he knows he's not accountable for it. And he did it with Simcha. Mommy, did you see that I was able to? I said, yeah, you're amazing. I wrote a whole letter to his Rebbe the next day. You don't understand what my son did. Should feel like a giver. My point is, you have to really get up every morning and choose this. So I have the Simcha and the opportunity every morning to choose something that can be very hard. where I say today's going to be an amazing day. And you know what it is? Every day's an amazing day. I look at life very differently now. So I decided on Rosh Hashanah, I'm still davening for life. I'm just davening for mine and my kids. I didn't really do that before. I was too intensely davening for my husband's that I forgot about my own. Also, now it's different. Now I daven for mine. Let this year be a good year for me, for my kids. Let me feel the same life I felt before. Maybe even better. Because I can leave my house now. I can do more things. I can be myself in a different way that I couldn't be before. Because I was being with my husband. And I kept saying to him, I remember having these really funny discussions with him, where I would say to him, I'm not doing chesed! And he would crack up laughing. I was so annoyed because I wasn't making dinner for the person who had a baby, and I wasn't, like, hosting, and I wasn't, there was a lot of things I wasn't doing because I couldn't do them. And he was cracking up, Naruka, what do you think you do all day? I'm like, nothing, I take care of you and my kids. He's like, right. And you think that's chesed? I'm like, no. He's like, why? So no, chesed, like you make a meal for someone who has a baby, like that's chesed, right? It's like, Naruka, you have it wrong. Chesed starts at home. We're so thinking that chesed has to be for everybody else that we don't take care of our own family. You are doing ultimate chesed. It's harder to take care of your family all day, every day, than it is to give someone else a meal. And he's like, do you know when people call you a day, Rivka, to ask you advice? I'm like, nuh-uh. He's like, watch the phone ring. You don't even realize. Do you have many things you do when you work for HTOR on the computer, even though you're not there, that if you weren't actually doing this, there wouldn't be classes? I'm like, so? He's like, Rivka, you're missing it. This is chesed. That is exactly what you're doing. It took me a very long time to believe him. A super, super long time to believe him. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, that really was chesed. And it was a tremendous privilege for me. So I still have the same chesed, just with my kids. I can be a lot more for them. So I was working a lot right after he passed away. And what my oldest son said to me one day, Mommy, I think we really need you home. You're working a lot, and we know you're working for us, but I think we really need you home. I said, okay. Called my work the next day. I need to quit. They said, what? I said, yeah, I'm sorry. My kids need me home. You need to give me severance pay, because otherwise I can't quit. I've been working for you for 9 years. I'll come back another time. Right now, my kids need me. There's no discussion. Give me my severance. I'm giving you 2 weeks notice right now. They were like, for real? I said, no, for real. This was right before summer vacation. I took my kids 10 days to Herzliya, which was always our vacation place. I actually am making my kids an album because we've been going to Herzliya because it's in Israel. It's 40 minutes from here. It was very easy for us to get to, and we have a beautiful apartment there that's a friend of ours on the beach. It was comfortable for my husband, so it's pretty much the only vacation we've done in 11 years, okay? So I literally have 11 years of pictures from when we were first married to now of Herzliya. My kids being baby, my kids growing up, my babies, my twins being born, my twins growing up. So I thought maybe this would be a little bit hard for them to be in Herzliya. They were the most excited little kids. We're walking on the beach because what did we do on the beach? We collected seashells. He couldn't go into the water, but we collected seashells. So they were walking up and down the beach, and they found the most exquisite seashells this year that we never found before there. Been going for 11 years, never found these seashells. Mommy, mommy, look, Abba's finding us seashells. Look, look. In crazy excitement, these, mommy, mommy, you don't understand. We never find these. For sure, Abba's finding us seashells. 100%, Mama, Abba's finding you seashells. You can't understand what these seashells look like. In 11 years, they've never found these seashells in Herzliya, ever. Abba was finding them seashells, and they felt it. And they weren't sad. They were so excited. Mommy, we had the best times here. We had the best vacations here. It was so fun. And they were so excited to talk about it. In the middle of my Herzliya trip, I was like, let's do something crazy. I made tickets to Cyprus, rented a villa with a pool over there. And I'm like, that's it. We're going on another vacation. My kids are like, really? I'm like, mm-hmm. Took my kids 9 days to Cyprus. Time of our lives. I turned off my phone, my computer, everything. I had my phone just for Waze. You cannot understand how many hugs and kisses I got from my children. Thank you so much, Mommy, that you're home. Thank you so much, Mommy, you're not on your phone. Thank you so much, Mommy, that you took the time to think about how hard it was for us. And you made this summer so amazing. I said, okay, but we're going to do this summer with the intention that this year is going to start new and amazing. We're not going to have a sad year. We're going to have an amazing year. Abba Taya Vibasimcha, I Taya Vibasimcha, this is what we're doing. We're starting the school year that way. I prepared all their backpacks and everything before. Everything brand new. Everything amazing. And they started this year different kids. They go to school. They're all writing their machberot. They're all doing what they're supposed to be doing. And they're so excited to be in school. Their teachers are calling me. Whoa! They're really okay. And I'm like, yeah, they're really okay. They're not just okay. They're doing great. Because they understand how amazing life is. And sometimes it's hard for them, and I remind them, you know, it's okay if it's hard. It means that you love him so much if it feels that way. And it's not a bad thing. Hard is not bad. Challenge is not bad. These are things that help you grow and become the person that you are today sitting here. It doesn't mean they don't hurt. It means they make you who you are, and you can choose either to be miserable or you could choose not. I choose not. Even on a hard day for me, I'm still choosing not, but I know my limitations. So we're about to go into Yom Kippur, and I think it's really, really important to choose a year of Simcha. To put yourself in a frame of mind where you say, I'm asking you to seal us in a book of life, Hashem. Whatever that means. What does that mean? I just don't want to die? Is that what we're saying? Or are we saying, I really want to live? I really want to live. How do we do that? We choose to live. Choosing to live means we appreciate what we have. I literally stand here now and I'm telling you I have everything I could possibly imagine. I don't need anything else. I'm not lacking anything. I'm not lacking anything. I have an amazing life. It's challenging. It has its hard parts. It has things that are difficult. It's still an amazing life. And I very much hope that I'm able to take everything my husband taught me, make it an aliyah for him, and a constant reminder for my children, for our children. That his legacy still goes all the time, whether he's here physically or not, because he's here either way. But my kids deserve an amazing life. And I deserve an amazing life. But I choose it. So I give you all a bracha to choose a real life and a life where you are able, with clarity, to choose simcha every day, know your limitations, and understand that being sad and being happy at the same time is also okay. Having something hard is not bad. It's challenging for your benefit, because you're loved. I repeat to my kids all day long, Hashem bore olam, u'manhig olam, u'melech ha'olam, u'avinu shebashamayim. This is like I say this to my kids all day long. He created the world. He runs the world. He's king of the world. He's our Abba in heaven, and he loves us so much. Sometimes he has to do something hard to his children because it makes us who we are. You ever say no to your kids? You don't really want to say no, but you have to because you're trying to teach them how to be normal adults. It doesn't feel good to give your kids a time out or to tell them no for you. But you have to because you're training them to be the best they can be. It's not a punishment. You're not striking them down from Shemayim. You're doing it because you love them. Hashem does the same thing. I love you so much, my kinder love. You have no idea how much pain I'm in giving you your nisyonos. Because I'm watching my kids in pain. But I know it's going to make you the best that you can be. So thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. And it should be a year filled with simcha and only good things.
Thank you. That was a good speech.